Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another What's the Res? An ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debate. My name is Josh Herring. I'm a humanities instructor at Thales Academy Rollsville and the debate coach. Tonight, I am coming to you from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and at the end of a long day at a conference dealing with questions of justice and particularly social justice. I've had a wonderful time at this conference put on by the Acton Institute and Liberty Fund, and my thanks to both of those organizations for putting on this great event. All day today, I've been listening to other people talk about and discussing with them about the concepts of justice. So in this episode, I'll admit I'm being a little bit self-serving because putting this episode together helps me process everything that happened today. But I want to cover one of the most helpful paradigms or values, rather, for Lincoln Douglas debate, and that's the value of justice. I've now been coaching students in LD for 3 years and then judging LD rounds for at least 2 of those years. And justice is one of the easiest values for students to reach for, I find, whether that's in my students prepping their cases or in cases that I'm watching students perform and then weighing against their opponents. So in this episode, I want to begin by discussing justice, and then we're going to go over 3 different conceptions of justice and several different theorists and philosophers who have proposed different ideas of justice, and we'll conclude at the end with some considerations for how you can apply this to your cases. So let's jump right in. I want to begin with considering this question of justice as a value in LD with a question that you have to answer if you want to use this value. That question is, which justice? Which kind of justice are you going to be talking about? Justice is a time-honored concept. It's something that human beings long for, and when pressed for the particularities of what exactly is justice and what do we mean by justice, I think we often have a lot of trouble putting together what exactly is inside that concept. The concept is ancient. It shows up throughout the Hebrew Bible where people cry out to God for justice. It was the subject of Socrates' conversation that Plato recorded in his masterpiece, The Republic, where the question of what is justice drove Socrates to amplify the human heart into an entire city to try to imagine what justice was for a city in order to then drop down to what is justice for a person. And of course, in a properly Socratic way, Socrates doesn't really answer the question. He simply leaves us with that burning question. Well, today in my conference, we went over 3 different conceptions of justice, and that's what I want to cover today. A lot of this material comes from a presentation made by Dr. Kevin Schmeising of the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion, and if I get his consent to link his slides, I'll put those in the show notes, but that's depending on whether or not he's okay with sharing his slides. But I want to begin with what Dr. Schmeising called the classical sense of justice. He tracked this sense of justice back to the Greeks and the Romans. And in doing that, he looked at the ways in which those 2 different civilizations really share a common concept of justice. And he put it this way, quote, "Justice is the constant and perpetual will to render to each his due." Now, that's a fairly straightforward definition of justice, meaning that what you're trying to do is for someone is just in as much as he gives every person that he interacts with what is due to that person. A society, by that definition, is just so long as it renders to each member of the society what is due, and each citizen of that society is just as long as it fulfills whatever obligations it owes to its society. Dr. Schmeising argued that really this is the same kind of definition of justice that Aristotle, Augustine, and Justinian are really all considering, whether we look at Aristotle's book, The Politics, Augustine's City of God, or Justinian's Code. This is the concept of justice that reverberated throughout the ancient and classical worlds. Now, this kind of justice can be applied in both general and particular ways. In terms of general application, here we're talking about how justice involves seeking the common good. This kind of justice means that citizens have an obligation, society has an obligation, to seek what is good for everyone. And this really becomes the philosophical ground for establishing legal force or coercion underneath the rule of law. This is why cultures can mandate that citizens actually follow the law, because they're appealing to justice, and they're, in doing that, they're actually working for the good of everyone. And that's what societies and governments are seeking for their people. Now, justice, though, can also be applied in particular ways, and Dr. Schmeissig's presentation was very helpful. He brought in three traditional categories that, honestly, are not really considered enough in contemporary discussions of justice, but they were very helpful ways to think about the way in which justice is complex. The first of those is called distributive justice, and this is defined as the duty the community owes to the individual. This is considering the question of what does the community owe to each person that's in it? And in what way does the community distribute resources to make sure that every individual has the basic necessities of life? So here we're talking about access to food, clothing, and shelter, and other things that a particular society might declare to be necessities. We might be talking about education. We might be talking about job access. There's all kinds of other things that might be a part of distributive justice. That's going to depend on the particular society. Now, one place that historically distributive justice comes in is that it became the justification for the French monarchy to fix prices on bread during the years preceding the French Revolution. And the argument for why the monarchy could fix prices on bread had everything to do with distributive justice. It was the monarchy's job to make sure that everyone had access to bread, and they wouldn't be able to afford bread if the price was too high. So it's a question not of free market economics, but rather of distributive justice to make sure that the lowest members of society could in fact afford bread. So distributive justice comes into play. One place I've seen this come in recently is in the Netflix film, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. And in that movie, there's a fascinating moment where there's a famine that has struck the country of Malawi. And in Malawi, the people are demanding that their government make sure send grain for them to buy. Now, I do want to make sure we note an important distinction here. The people are not asking for grain to be given to them. That's something a little bit different we'll get to later. But rather, the question of distributive justice means that grain should be available for them to buy. And it's a question of distributive justice that the state be able to provide access to grain lest the people starve. Now, the second kind of particular justice that we focused on today is called communitive justice. And this is defined as the duties that citizens have towards each other. As persons, citizens owe each other a moral duty of honesty. That might be honesty in their contracts. That might be honesty in that they do business in good faith. But that's a matter of communicative justice, rendering to each person their due in terms of social interactions. The third, and possibly most troubling to a contemporary audience, kind of classical particular justice, is called retributive justice. This is the justice of punishment for violating the law. A society is formed underneath the rule of law, and part of the government's role is to punish the lawbreakers. So this retributive justice is asserting that actually what is due to the criminal is punishment. And that punishment is intended for a couple different purposes. The metaphorical picture here is that the criminal has harmed the social whole. It's as if he had ripped the fabric of society, and because he has ripped the fabric of society, he owes a debt of pain and suffering to society for the wrong he has done. Well, that wrong he has done then is also going to be functional in an educational way, because other people will see the retributive justice that's worked out on this criminal, and that will then help them know not to commit such crimes. Now, this then is the classical sense of justice, and again, that definition of justice is, quote, the constant and perpetual will to render to each his due. And that can happen on a societal level, that can happen on an individual level. And in each case, the question is, what is due to this individual? And what do I owe him? What does he owe me? What does the community owe me? What do I owe the community? The second kind of justice we talked about today is called utilitarian justice. Now, this is a much more modern sense of justice. It develops in the 19th century in the immediate aftermath of the Industrial Revolution and increased urbanization. Our two theorists for this kind of justice are John Stuart Mills and Jeremy Bentham. They develop a system of thinking that's called utilitarianism, where the utilitarian principle states that society should maximize the happiness and well-being of the whole to the greatest extent possible. The utilitarian goal is to promote happiness to the greatest extent possible, and that's really what utilitarianism defines justice as being. Justice involves bringing about more happiness for other people, and in doing that, they achieve justice. Now, there is a profound weakness at the heart of this particular understanding of justice, and it's the idea that this sort of justice does not really have any protection for human rights buried in its core. After all, if a utilitarian case for justice could say, you know what, it is actually productive of more happiness for more people if a society has slaves, regardless of the slaves' right to their persons and right to their labor. So instead of having a protection over the slavery and of the right to their labor, these slaves, or a utilitarian society, could affirm slavery. Well, that's a problem for utilitarian justice, but it certainly is a frequent approach to justice, where justice is equated to the action that will produce the most happiness for the most people, regardless of a few who might suffer. Now, utilitarian justice is a 19th century theory. I want to conclude this podcast today with two contemporary thinkers about justice, and those both come from the latter half of the 20th century. And those are Friedrich Hayek and John Rawls. Friedrich Hayek is an Austrian economist, and in his Constitution of Law and Liberty, he devotes quite a bit to defining justice and explaining how he believes justice works, particularly in opposition to the phrase social justice. As an Austrian economist, Hayek believes that social justice is a meaningless phrase that works as what he calls a sort of open sesame. Legislators who want to get something accomplished simply say, "This is a matter of social justice," and boom, their legislation gets passed. Well, Hayek is careful, though. He does not like social justice, but he's very careful to say that doesn't mean the concept of justice is meaningless in and of itself. Instead, he picks up on the classical definition of justice as giving to people what they are due, and is careful to articulate that in a 20th century way. Particularly, he states that human actions are what can be evaluated as just or unjust. We cannot, according to Hayek, really evaluate the actions of a society or of a culture or an institution as just or unjust, only the actions of the individual. So, in which case, according to Hayek, it is meaningless to speak of social justice or structural injustice. Now, Hayek goes on in his work to develop a particular view of society and of government in society. And Hayek talks about society as a game. He picks up on a Greek word, katalaktics, which has to do with exchange and buying and selling and bringing into being. And he calls society the game of katalaxy. What he's getting at there is that society functions like a game. Just like a soccer game or a basketball game, there are clear rules, and then there are players within the rules. The other actor in this kind of a game is the referee. And this is the role that Hayek gives to the government and to justice. It is the role of the government to ensure a just society, meaning that the rules are clearly promulgated or set forth and that the rules are enacted fairly so that all members of society have the possibility to flourish accordingly, based on the rules of the game of katalaxy. Now, where Hayek is particularly focused is that he's articulating a response to social justice theorists in his time, And he does not believe that the government should actively redistribute wealth. Instead, he believes that it's the government's role to protect the integrity of the game. So now he has plenty of room for individuals to recognize human need and then give according to that need. What he does not have room for is any kind of systematic redistribution. That is something that Hayek thinks violates the game of catalaxy and is inappropriate for a government to undertake. Now, our final theorist and our last one, our second thinker in terms of contemporary thought is a gentleman named John Rawls. John Rawls was a Harvard theoretician and philosopher who is focused on the question of social justice, or particularly what he called justice as fairness. And John Rawls is particularly interested in creating a system of justice that everyone can agree with in a pluralistic society. Now, the problem with the previous definition that I gave, particularly the classical definition for Rawls, is that rendering to each person what he is due depends on everybody recognizing what is due to someone else. And in a modern society where we have different religions, different classes, different competing interests, it's really hard to determine what is it that everyone is due. So for Rawls, he argues that justice is actually formed by ensuring equal access to societal essentials. He calls this the basic structure of society. Different societal institutions are intended to make sure everyone has equal access to the structure of society. This is similar to the concept of social capital, where the ability people have to maneuver, to make connections in society, to access the higher institutions of learning, all of those are pieces, elements of social capital. Rawls believes that every person in a society should have equal access to all the wealth and resources of society, unless distributing those in different equalities will actually benefit those who are least enfranchised in that society. Now, Rawls develops a particular concept of justice that he believes is found through thinking through a thought experiment that he calls the original position. Here's how this works. For Rawls, justice is not an objective concept. Instead, justice is constructed by people thinking through the original position. Here's how the original position works. We need to imagine that all of society, that justice is formed by a group of people sitting around a table, and they are literally going to come up with a set of rules and parameters for society that everyone can agree with. Now, Rawls goes on to argue that the only way we could come up with a set of rules that everyone agrees with is if we adopt what he calls the veil of ignorance, where we have to pretend and imagine that we don't know who our families are, what our social position is, what our aspirations are. We don't know any of those things that might give any of us advantages. And then we have to come up with rules that we think would work for anyone without knowing anyone else's social position. Rawls argues that this is going to produce what he calls a system of procedural justice. And he uses the same kind of analogy that my parents used for me when I was a kid. Often, when me and my brothers would make a pizza on Friday night, so my parents would set up at one point this rule where I was supposed to slice the pizza since I was the oldest. But they knew that I would always try to cut myself the biggest pieces. So the trick was that I would need to slice the pizza in such a way, and then my brothers would both get to pick their pieces of pizza before I could. Well, being motivated by my own interest, I would then slice fairly, and that would give my brothers an equal opportunity to get as much pizza as they wanted. Rawls argues that if we put on the veil of ignorance and imagine ourselves in the original position of society, we will actually come up with a set of rules that become the foundation of justice that does not discriminate in any way against other people, because we're imagining everyone in this position of equality and fairness. Now, this is Rawls' system of justice. He imagines that justice is this very constructed kind of thing that's formed through this thought experiment. Now, Rawls is the latest thinker to be incredibly influential. It takes a long time for academic thinkers to be influential. John Rawls has been the most influential thinker in terms of justice over the last 50 years. Friedrich Hayek is a right-wing political theorist. John Rawls is a left-wing political theorist. For the last 50 years, Dr. Schmeissig told us today that every thinker who has asked questions of justice and written or debated about justice has interacted with the work of John Rawls. So this conception of justice has been hugely influential for everyone on the left-leaning side of contemporary American politics. And he's an important thinker to interact with. Now, over the last 20 minutes, we've covered quite a lot of justice paradigms. So in paradigm number one, we talked about the classical view of justice, and there we're looking at ideas from Aristotle, Augustine, and Aquinas. In paradigm number two, we were looking at utilitarian justice from John Stuart Mills and Jeremy Bentham. And in paradigm number three, justice and contemporary thought, we were considering the work of Friedrich Hayek and John Rawls. At the end of the day, as you are constructing your Lincoln Douglas case and thinking about what's the value that you should use to strengthen your arguments and shape your case, you may very well reach for justice. But hopefully after this podcast, you're better equipped to understand the importance of the question, which justice? Are you thinking about the classical view of justice, where it's all about render to each person what is his due, and then we need to figure out, are we talking about a general justice or a particular justice? Is it communicative, retributive, or distributive in nature? Or perhaps you're thinking of a utilitarian justice. Does society owe each individual happiness? And perhaps you want to go down that route, in which case you need to look at the work of John Stuart Mills and Jeremy Bentham and consider their argument of the utilitarian or hedonic calculus. And how do we ensure that society provides the most happiness for the most people? Or perhaps you're intrigued by this idea of the game of catalaxy and the government as a referee, ensuring that fair practice and fair play allow for people to do whatever they want inside the parameters that a good government sets up. Or maybe you really like this idea of John Rawls and the idea of a society that sets itself up through the thought experiment of the original position and the veil of ignorance. Now, if you like John Rawls, I will also mention that John Rawls is the foundation for contemporary social justice theory. Rawls argued that we could set up society where everyone had an equal share of the financial wealth in a society, or at least those who were disenfranchised monetarily had access to other systems that would help raise them up in society. Rawls is your best bet if you are leaning towards a left-leaning redistributive justice kind of scenario. I hope this was a helpful episode for you. If you like what you've been listening to here on What's the Res, please find us on iTunes if you haven't already, and give us a 5-star review, and feel free to leave us a note. Let help other people find our podcast that way. You can also get in touch with us at whatsthereres@gmail.com or follow us on whatsthereres_ on Instagram. My name is Josh Herring, and this has been another episode of What's the Res, an ongoing conversation about the current resolutions in the world of high school debate. You've been listening to a mini episode dealing with the value of justice for Lincoln Douglas debate. I look forward to joining you next time for more What's the Res.